Brothers and sisters in the Dhamma, today is the 30th July 2020. It's a Thursday, so we will be having our Thursday class. We will be continuing with our Heart Sutta second edition sharing. We are at page 158, lesson 32 of the Heart Sutta. So today's topic is very interesting. It's about the 18 sense rhyme. The three sets of sixes. 3 times 6 is 18. That's how the 18 sense rhyme come about. It basically arises because we have the six sense. So the first pair of six are the senses, the five physical senses and the brain. So the six sense. Then we have the respective sense data that come in. Then we have a mind or consciousness trapped inside the body that can arise contact. So when contact arises, the third set of six, the respective consciousness comes to be. That's how the 18 sense rhyme arises. So this 18 sense rhyme is very useful, very important. It summarizes to us completely the understanding of who we are, what we are, and how we function as a human being. It is the 18 sense rhyme that allows us to have the ability to know the world, to interact with the world. Without the 18 sense rhyme, we are like a vegetable. We can't function. And the most important element within the 18 sense rhyme is our mundane mind, the consciousness that is trapped inside the physical body. Without this, the 18 sense rhyme cannot arise. You may have the senses. You may have the sense data, but without the mundane mind, the consciousness to make contact, to trigger the respective consciousness, we can't really function. Because to know the world, we need the consciousness. To see, we need the seeing consciousness. To hear, we need the hearing consciousness. To smell, we need the smell consciousness. And to taste, we need the taste consciousness. Then to tactile feel, we need the tactile consciousness. Then to arise mental consciousness, we need the brain. The brain that perceives and input the content of consciousness. Without wisdom, the brain is dangerous. Because without wisdom, the brain is deluded. It cannot arise the right thought, right speech, and right action. So this topic, 18 sense rhyme, is very, very useful. As usual, we will have our half an hour of awareness-based meditation. So from the word awareness-based meditation means you must develop the awareness or sati or mindfulness in order to meditate. Because without awareness, you cannot meditate. In fact, awareness is our true mind. When our mind is without thought, we are naturally aware. Because that is our nature. Our awareness nature is within. The moment thought ceases, the awareness will shine forth. So this is the most important understanding. So in meditation, the sole purpose is to realize this silent mind, the awareness within, the sati, the mindfulness, or what we call the awareness nature, which is also your true mind, your meditative mind or meditative state. So to develop the meditative state is to realize the inner peace, inner calmness, and the inner mindfulness that is within your nature. So this is what meditation is all about. That's why it's very easy. If you can relax body and mind and don't think, then you are already aware. But human beings' problem is they have the five mental hindrances. And the reason why they have the five mental hindrances is because they lack the opposite five spiritual faculties. Spiritual faculties are special mind states that can allow you to understand spiritual teaching. And the Buddha named them five. He said, Saddha in Pali, the first one is faith or confidence in the Buddha and his teaching, through knowing who the Buddha is and how special a being he is and how wonderful a teaching he has given us. Then the second one is Virya. Virya is a type of spiritual tenacity or zeal, Z-E-A-L, to walk this path. After we know the importance of this teaching and the importance of training our mind to develop this meditative state, then we will arise the virya, the spiritual zeal or tenacity to cultivate. So this is a special faculty, spiritual faculty, the second one that will move you. Then when you are motivated, when you have the spiritual zeal and tenacity to do it, you will naturally develop the third spiritual faculty, which is sati or mindfulness or awareness. So awareness-based meditation is to develop awareness. And to have awareness is to relax body and mind and silent. No need to think. That's why meditation becomes very simple. So relax body and mind, silent everything, and just allow the mind to settle down and become peaceful with inner awareness. The inner awareness is the most important. Then that mind, when you stabilize it, you can use it to meditate. That is the one that can observe without thought, that can listen without thought, that can smell, taste, tactile, feel, or think without thought. It can be conscious. But there is no content of consciousness. Then if you need to function as a human being, then only you input the content of consciousness. Then you need to use thought, you arise them. You don't need, most of the time you are quiet, peaceful and silent. So when you understand this, you can meditate easily. Then when your sati develop, mindfulness develop through this awareness-based meditation, you need to stabilize it until it becomes collected and unwavering. And that is samadhi. So when you have samadhi, you can see things as they are. Your mind will never waver. It's always collected. That's how you can have the direct seeing to awaken, to develop the meditation. So when you understand all this, meditation is very simple. Where you can see things as they are, without the direct seeing, without thought. The memory with its views, opinion, and conditioning will not come in and interfere. Then you can see things as they are to develop the wisdom and the understanding. That's why the last spiritual faculty, which is panya or wisdom, will arise naturally. So spiritual faculties are very important. When you have them, the mental hindrances. So if you have trained yourself in daily life, when you live the life with mindfulness and awareness, means you have order. Your brain is in order. The way you live life is within the moral understanding. You follow the moral code, the moral principle. You don't violate them. You develop the understanding and the wisdom to be at peace with all things, at all moments, at all locations and places. That is what meditation is all about. To develop the wisdom to awaken so that we understand clearly who we are, what we are. That's why today's topic, the 18th sense line, can allow you to understand that. And when you understand this, meditation becomes very easy. In fact, under our fourth foundation of mindfulness, Dhammanupassana, there are five categories of practices. First is mindfulness of the five mental hindrances, which we have covered, followed by the mindfulness of the five aggregate of form and mind, which we have also covered. Then the third category of cultivation is mindfulness of the six internal sense bases and six external sense bases. When you are mindful of them, when they come into contact together with mind, it triggers off naturally the third set of six, the six respective sense of consciousness. That's how the 18 sense rhyme come to be. And that's how you know the world. That's how you interact with the world. So, ability to know the world is through our senses, our sense of consciousness. Where we can arise a seeing consciousness, to see we can know the world. To hear we can know the world. So the world of sight and sound, you can perceive them through your hearing and seeing consciousness. Then the smell, the taste, the tactile, they are so beautiful. They are nature's gift to us. And to me, this is the most important gift. Without this, we cannot know the world. We cannot interact with the world. We cannot experience life. We cannot develop understanding, wisdom. So the 18th sense rhyme is very, very important, very special, and very unique. So with this, you should know how to meditate. As usual, relax. Don't try to know, don't do anything, and maintain awareness. Allow the mind to settle down. Whatever arises, let it arise. Then let it settle down and cease. Then realize that silent mind, that true mind, the meditative mind, the awareness nature within, the mindfulness within. Today's topic is very unique, like I mentioned before we start the puja. We are going through the 18th sense line. This 18th sense line consists of three sets of sixes. And the 18th sense rhyme are very important. The first sets of six refer to the six internal sense bases or organs that we have. They are the five basic sense organs. So these five basic physical sense organs, as we know, we have the eye that can arise the seeing consciousness. We have the ear that can arise the hearing consciousness. The smell that can arise the smell consciousness. Then the taste that can arise the taste consciousness. Then we have the bodily tactile that can arise the tactile consciousness. And the last one is our brain. Our brain is the last one that one can give rise to mental consciousness, thinking consciousness or thought consciousness. So these are the first six sets of internal sense organs. Then the second set of six refer to the six respective external sense data. So this external sense data that we receive from external is very useful. Then the last set of six is the six type of respective sense of consciousness. Take for example, our organ or seeing, which is the I, EYE. For seeing consciousness to arise, we need the sense data to come in, which are color, shape, and form with the light. Then if your mind, the consciousness, is located at that organ of seeing, then we can become conscious of what we see. Yeah. But without light as a media, without the color, shape, and form transmitted, we can't see. So the seeing consciousness is condition arising, dependent originating. So we need these three conditions to arise the respective consciousness. So for seeing, we need the organ, which is the eye itself, functioning. Then we need the sense data, which is the color, shape, and form, and the light media. Then we need the consciousness that is trapped within the physical body to arise the contact. Then like the physics experiment, upon contact, the light bulb lights up. When the light bulb lights up, it's like we become conscious of what we see. That's how seeing consciousness come to be. And exactly like the physics experiment, all this arises naturally following nature's law, scientific law, physical law of nature, which is the law of physics. Then if you are mindful and aware, every moment of consciousness is the same. It arises naturally. That's why the Buddha said you don't need a God or Almighty to create seeing consciousness. No need. Everything is natural. When the conditions are there, it arises. Then when it arises, we can become conscious of what we see. So according to the Buddha, he said at the moment of seeing, there is only the seeing consciousness. There is no one behind the seeing. And this one we have to meditate to find out. We have to have very stable mindfulness, awareness within, to become conscious or aware of what is happening upon contact. The meaning is very deep and is very easy to understand if you have mindfulness, if you can be aware from within to see how it arises. So that ability to observe through the silent mind is the way forward in meditation. That is how we come to develop the understanding that leads to the wisdom. So at the moment of contact, that consciousness arises, like the Buddha said, it's just that consciousness. You become conscious. That's it. Nothing. Just the pure consciousness, without the content going in. But because human being has the brain, our brain is the organ that is responsible for our accumulation of experiences. Whatever life experiences that you experience will be accumulated into your brain, may be good or bad. So this accumulation of experiences is the one that created the memory bank inside. Because our brain is full of memory cells. So when the memories are there, when you retrieve it through making contact with the brain, that's why every moment of seeing, hearing, smell, taste, tactile, and thought consciousness, the human being, they always recite their consciousness at the forehead where the brain is, so that from there it can trigger off the content of consciousness. So thought being response to memory, it will trigger off, it will come off. But our brain is the accumulation of not only experiences. Through this accumulation of experiences, good or bad, we created our own views and opinion, our conditioning, our belief system. our tradition, our whatever that we hold on to, like our race, our religion, our traditional belief system, all this, they become part and parcel of memory. So these views, opinion, conditioning, belief system, and whatever that we hold on inside our brain, which is the result of all the conditioning over the years that we have gone through life. And this is the bundle of memories with its views, opinion, and conditioning that we act from. So that's like acting from memory is not acting at all, because this memory, which is your views, opinion, and conditioning, they are not wisdom. They don't have right view, because they lack enlightenment, awakening. So before you are enlightened, before you are awakened, your memory is full of all this, what they call conditioning, views, opinion, and all. That's the reason why when you see something, or you hear something, smell something, taste something, or tactile, you feel something, you will react and stir your mind according to what you believe in, according to your views, your opinion, your habitual tendency, and the way you perceive that reality. That's how you label it, like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant. That's how your mind stir and react to whatever you see. So all these are dualities that arise through our views, opinion, and conditioning. That's the reason why the mental hindrance of sensual desire and ill will arise. And what are they? They are your like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience. So if throughout the day, every moment of sense experience, you stir your mind and develop this until it becomes habitual, then this habitual tendency, which is from your memory, will continue to stir your mind, make you heedless, give rise to heedlessness that leads to the lack of peace, lack of inner peace, inner calmness, and you are not able to be aware of what is going on. Well, when you stir your mind, you become emotional. Then it will affect you. Then you are lost in thought, preoccupied with what you are thinking and your emotion. That's how you experience the world. That's how you get yourself entangled. That's how you create mental hindrance. And what are mental hindrance? Mental hindrance are mind states that hinders your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. That's the reason why when you have mental hindrance, you cannot meditate, because you lack the opposite five spiritual faculties. When you lack the opposite five spiritual faculties, mental hindrance arise. Not only the first two, even the fourth one, especially restlessness. When you have problem, you have fear, worry, anxiety, your mind becomes restless. Your mind cannot settle down because you worry a lot. You got unresolved issue, unfinished problem. Especially for those who break their precept, violates the moral code, the nature's law. So all this triggers mental hindrance. Then you start to have restlessness of mind, born of fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lamentation. Then when you don't understand, you start to have fear, you start to have doubt. Then when you are very tired, when you don't see the importance of life, the thing that you are involved in, you start to become sleepy. That's how sloth and torpor, the third mental hindrance, come to be. So all these five mental hindrances, they will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state. your lack of peace, your heedlessness arise because of this mental hindrance. That's the reason why the Buddha emphasized a lot on the understanding of mental hindrance. And the first category of cultivation within the four foundation of mindfulness, which is Dhammanupassana, is mindfulness of the five mental hindrance. You cannot be mindful of them, you cannot meditate, you cannot develop the wisdom, because you will not be able to understand how the unarisen mental hindrance comes to be. But when you are mindful, you have the awareness, you can observe, and you can understand how the unarisen mental hindrance come to be. Because before they arise, the mental hindrance were not there. Then how did they arise? Because you stir your mind, you react, and come through. That is the result of your memory, your views, your opinion, your habitual tendency, your whatever conditioning, which is all from your brain, the memory. That's the reason why acting according to memory is not acting at all. Because memory is full of views, opinion, conditioning, and also your belief system. And it also carry along your phobia, your insecurity, your belief system, everything that you accumulate within your brain. Then even your selfishness, your wrong view, your emotional negativity, and all of the negativity of mind states, they are all accumulated. So when you act from there, you are acting with the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. That's the reason why you become heedless. You will trigger on the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion with every moment of sense experience. That's the reason why you become heedless. And with that, you cannot live long. You will entangle yourself and create a lot of wrong thought, leading to all the sorrow, lamentation. Because wrong thoughts are thoughts that condition your fear, your worry, your sorrow, your lamentation, your unhappiness, your misery, including your evil roots of selfishness, greed, covetousness, desire, lust, jealousy, envy, craving, desire, leading to all the grasping, clinging, and the holding on to a lot of things which you believe they are real. That's how suffering comes to be. Craving is the cause of suffering. A craving born of attachment, clinging, grasping, which is also the result of self-delusion. Because when you have self-delusion, you believe the physical body and mind, the human being, is real. You believe you exist. That's how you arise the personality, the egoic mind. And from there, you want to own things, possess things. That's how selfishness comes to be. And the evil roots of greed arise. Then when you cannot get what you want, you become emotional, you become unhappy. That's how the evil root of anger, hatred, envy, jealousy, they arise. Then when you don't have the understanding, when you have delusion, you will have fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lamentation. That's how suffering arises. So the three evil roots are root of all evil, make you evil. So meditation is to reverse all this, to understand all this through observation, with mindfulness, with awareness. When we can see ourselves, our own form and mind, conditioning us, and causing us to react to sense experience and to become evil, to become heedless, then what must we do? We must straighten our view. We must reverse all this. We must develop heedfulness. We must develop the opposite five spiritual faculties so that we can become mindful, aware within the moment, so that our mind is in the meditative state all the time, ever mindful, constantly meditating, so that we can cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. This is what meditation is all about. So the 18th sense line will help us understand all this, because we operate and function as a human being through the senses. Without the senses, we are like a vegetable. We are dead. So the senses help us. The senses will trigger off the respective six types of sense door consciousness. When we can become conscious of what we see, what we hear, what we smell, what we taste, what we tactile feel and think, then we arise. We become animated into a human being. Then we can have life experiences. We can experience the world. That's how we come to know the world. That's how we interact with the world. And that's how we function as a human being. We are the consciousness trapped inside, together with the six sense bases and the external six sense data, trigger of the respective six type of sense door consciousness. Three times six equals 18. That's the reason why we call it the 18th sense line. And that's what the Buddha's teaching is all about. So now we will go back to the short notes. All the short notes that we have under chapter 32, then you will understand. The 18th sense line consists of three sets of six. So now it's very easy to understand. The first set of six refers to the six internal sense organ or sense bases. Then the second set of six refer to the six external sense data. Yeah. Then the third set of six refer to the respective six type of sense door consciousness. So understanding this 18th sense rhyme can lead to wisdom, can lead to the understanding of how we know the world and how we interact with the world, plus how we function as a human being, leading to the understanding of who you are, what you are. So understanding the form and mind in this way via the 18th sense line is very important. And to do it, you need to be mindful, you need to be aware, you need to silence your mind to observe. Through thought, you can't. Thought is knowledge. When you are thinking, you are lost in thought. When you are preoccupied with what you are thinking, how can you be aware? How can you be with the moment to understand what is going on? So you have to silence completely. And that is what mindfulness is all about. To be mindful is to be aware before the arising of the aggregates of mind or the thought process. That's why mindfulness is an awareness that is full of wisdom, energy, and clarity. That one can awaken. That one can develop the understanding, allow you to straighten your view, allow you to understand clearly who are you, what are you, and how you function as a human being. Then from there, we go on. The next is to understand what is Sankhara. It is very important for us to understand what Sankhara is. Sankhara is the content of consciousness, or everything that your mind can do, including the aggregates of feeling and perception. It includes all your mental movements and activity, like your mind states or mental states, your mental intention, including all your planning and your scheming, your mental formation, your conditioned views and opinion, etc. The consciousness aggregate is the pure receptacle before you input your content of consciousness. So the consciousness aggregate is very important, because this is the one that is like a receptacle to receive the content of consciousness. Then consciousness together with its content become the thought. And that is your second aspect of the five mental aggregates of form and mind that the Buddha refers to under the final summary of the First Noble Truth of Dukkha, and also under the Paticca Samuppada, in which the Buddha said, in short, it is due to your self-delusion or Sakkaya Ditthi that condition one's craving and clinging to grasp onto the five aggregates of form and mind that he called Dukkha. So when you look at the final summary of the First Noble Truth, you will understand the First Noble Truth very clearly, because he summarized all of the eight conditions that condition suffering or dukkha if you don't have the wisdom. And the eighth one is the final summary. He said, in short, all of suffering arise because of our self-delusion. We deludedly grasp and cling onto the five aggregates of form and mind, thinking that it is real, that it is what we are. That self-delusion is the one that conditions suffering. So he summarized as the upadana kandas. Upadana is grasping. Kandas is the aggregate. So the pancha upadana kandas is suffering. That is the final summary. So the upadana kandas, the grasping aggregates, condition suffering, is the cause of suffering. So these five aggregate of form and mind, we have to put it to test. We have to investigate into it to find out whether what the Buddha has told us is the truth or not. If we attach to this five aggregate of form and mind, do we suffer? You can check. When you are mindful, when you are aware, you can check. You can know. And it's very easy to check. Even the first aspect of the five aggregates of form and mind is, as a human or any living being, we have a physical body. So this is the rupa, the form aggregate. Then within the form aggregate, we have our senses. Then we have our consciousness trapped within this physical body. That is the mind. So these two combined is the first aspect of the five aggregate of form and mind. Then how did the five aggregate come to be? Well, the Buddha said our mind can be subdivided into four more aggregate of mind. To understand that, we need to inquire, what can our mind do? Then you will understand how the Buddha subdivide the four aggregates of mind. The Buddha said our mind can feel. That's why there is an aggregate of feeling. Then our mind can also perceive whatever we see, whatever we hear, we smell, we taste, we tactile feel and think. So perception is another ability of mind. That's why the second aggregate is perception. In Pali it's called sanya. So the feeling aggregate in Pali is called vedana. So vedana and sanya are the first two aggregate. And vedana feeling is just sensation. You can have this aggregate of feeling. You can feel hot and cold. You can feel the various emotions that arise, whether you are peaceful, calm, or agitated, restless, the lack of peace. Then the various mind state, the Buddha said there are 52, including your views, your opinion, and your conditioning. So the third aggregate of mind is Sankara. And in fact, Sankara is the whole content of consciousness, whatever your mind can do, including feeling and sanya, or perception. So Vedana, Sanya, Sankara is actually Sankara, the content of consciousness. And Sankara, as we have gone through just now, it covers everything that your mind can do. So what can our mind do? Our mind can think. That's like mental thinking, mental activity. That itself is part of Sankara. then we can arise mental states, mental formation, mental intention. So all this are part and parcel of sankhara. We can also arise the sankhara to plan, to scheme. That's the reason why cunningness is also a mental state. Sincerity, compassion, they are all the various mental states. That's why mental state, there are 52. So sankhara, once you develop the understanding, you will be able to understand the deep meaning of what the Buddha meant by sabbe sankhara anicchang. All of sankhara is impermanent. Then sabbe sankhara dukkhang. All of sankhara lead to suffering. When you deludedly grasp and cling, attach. Then sabbe dhamma anatta. So all this you will understand very easily. Then when you are mindful, aware of all your mental movement, your mental states, your mental activity, your sankhara activity, you will understand what sankhara is. In fact, you can go and check the traditional teaching, the textbook. They only define sankhara through a few words. Mental activity, mental state, mental formation, and I think one or two more words. And all these four or five words, they cannot define fully what sankhara is. That's the reason why you have to meditate. You have to be mindful, aware, to see all this. Then you will understand what sankhara is. That's the reason why I dare to teach you and define for you what sankhara is. Because cultivators have this problem of not understanding the Pali words. What is Vedana? What is Sanya? And what is Sankhara? Then the last one is that consciousness. Vijnana. Because we have this ability to become conscious of what we see, what we hear, what we smell, what we taste, what we tactile feel and think. So upon contact, when consciousness arrives, the content hasn't come in. That's why there is the pure seeing, the direct seeing, before the content goes in. So meditation is to develop the mindfulness to have this ability to see things as they are, before the words, the concept, and the memory conditioning comes into play. Otherwise, you will stir your mind, you will react, because your views, your opinion, your conditioning, your memory, your belief system, everything, they will come in and interfere with your seeing, your hearing, your smell, your taste, your tactile and your thought process. That's the reason why Jay Krishnamurti said acting from memory is not acting at all. So the question that people don't understand is, they will ask you, if you don't act according to memory, then how do you act? Well, throughout their life, the healers, people, they only know how to act from memory. Well, without memory, they are like dead. Without thought, they are like dead. But the enlightened being, the cultivator, they act according to wisdom, understanding. After they have straightened their view, this wisdom connected to the form and mind. That's how they act. They act with understanding. And this is true action, pure action, free of the evil roots. That's why acting according to memory is not acting at all. Whereas acting according to wisdom, following Noble Eightfold Path, is the right way to act. And that is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. Right view, leading to all the Noble Eightfold Path factor of right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood. The four right effort, right mindfulness and samadhi. And that is what meditation is all about. So whatever you do in the name of meditation, if it doesn't lead you back to the Noble Eightfold Path, that is not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. And without Noble Eightfold Path, there is no spiritual faculties. Sadha, virya, sati, samadhi, panya, they are not there. especially sati. The uniqueness of the Buddha's teaching is this sati. You can't find in other teaching, except in some later modern teaching, where they talk about awareness, the present moment awareness, power of now, by Eckhart Tolle and J. Krishnamurti. So all this understanding will arise when you develop the meditative training in accordance with the Buddha Dhamma that the Buddha has taught us. So understanding the 18th sense rhyme with mindfulness can bring forth this understanding, and it will transform you, and you will become noble ones, enlightened ones, and your life will change, transform for the better. It will transform you personality-wise, character-wise, understanding-wise, so that you can become an enlightened being, a noble being. Noble being is an Arya. An enlightened being is called an Arya during the Buddha's time, because they are very noble in all aspects of life. They have the embodiment of Noble Eightfold Path. They have right view, means they are very noble in their understanding of life, the nature's law that governs life and existence, especially the spiritual law. They know, they understand. And they are very noble in the way they conduct themselves. That's why from right view, they arise the appropriate right speech, right action, right thought, and right speech, leading to right livelihood, the way they live their life, also in accordance with their right view. So they are very noble in all aspects of life. The way they conduct themselves, the way they communicate with people, the way they act, and the way they live their life, they are very noble. Then they have this four right effort to constantly purify themselves. The first right effort is to abandon the wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action that has a reason. Then the second right effort is to have the wisdom and the understanding to prevent the arising of the wrong thought, wrong speech, and wrong action born of wrong view. Then the third right effort is to cultivate the wholesome right thought, right speech, right action that are still not in you. That's why you have to cultivate, and you have to study through the first turning, listen to Dhamma, then investigate into it, inquiry, reflect, contemplate, then study. So pariyatti is very important, the first phase of Dhamma, the learning of the teaching. So when you learn what constitute the three evil roots, and what constitute the five mental hindrance, what constitute the five spiritual faculty, they can help you. They are very useful. Then when you also develop the understanding of what constitutes right thought, right speech, right action, then you become different. Then the third right effort can take off. If you don't understand what constitutes right thought, how do you cultivate? If you don't know what constitutes right speech, right action, how can you cultivate? That's why whatever thought that are free of the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, they are right thoughts, and there are many, many right thoughts which we have gone through. But the text or the traditional scripture teach only four types of right thought, the four Brahma Vihara, which is metta, or loving kindness, karuna, which is compassion, mudita, which is rejoicing in the wholesomeness of others, and the last one is equanimity. But right thought is not limited to these four. In fact, all of your wholesome thought, without the evil roots, they are all right thought. Like your thought of generosity, kindness, gentleness, blessedness, your sincere thought, your respect, your gratitude towards others, people who has helped you, people who has taught you and guided you well. And you can also have a lot of other wholesome thoughts, which are part of Noble Eightfold Path. And you can arise them to right effort to cultivate them. Then speech is the same. What are right speech? When you can avoid the four type of wrong speech, then you can have right speech. What are the four type of wrong speech? First is all the harsh speech that arise through anger, through ignorance, through delusion. When you are angry, violent, emotional, you speak harshly, you condemn people, you insult people, you scold people. These are all wrong speech. Then when you tell lie, you deceive people, you try to take advantage of the situation and people, you also arise wrong speech. Then the third one is when you backbite, when you say bad things behind people's back, that is also a wrong speech. When you try to like poke fire, they say ayabatu, means when they are not around, you say bad things about them to influence another person to also don't like or hate that person or create enmity. So all these are very severe wrong speech that can lead to severe karmic, where the resultant is the friction of it. You become the victim. In future, people do back all this that you do to people, to you. Is that what you want? The last one is frivolous speech, sweet nothing. Simply say things that you don't mean it. You think it's a joke, but it can lead to severe consequences. So when we understand this, then we can reflect and contemplate. If I can avoid all this, means I must speak not the harsh way. The opposite of harsh is what? I must be gentle, pleasant, and appropriate in the way I speak. So I must speak gently, pleasantly, with the appropriate type of right speech. Means with wisdom, with understanding, that can lead to harmony, love and understanding, that can make people feel good. So these are all appropriate good speeches. Then we speak the truth. We advise people accordingly. We give them faith, confidence, so that they do not fear. We arise a speech that is comforting, brings about understanding, harmony, and they will have joy, happiness. Then the other type of right speech is your wisdom and your understanding. You can help people by advising them to live their life appropriately, following the Dhamma way, so that they will have the good life and all. These are all appropriate right speeches. Then action is the same. When you are loving, compassionate, kind, gentle and pleasant, when your actions are very sincere, meticulous, you don't have the evil root. You don't kill, you don't harm, you don't cause unnecessary suffering and misery to fellow living beings. So all these are wrong action, but the opposite of it is the ennobler. They are the right action. So the ennobler of killing is what? To have love, universal love, metta. So the ennobler of stealing is what? Generosity. You give. So the ennobler of the third precept, which is lust, craving, desire, is contentment. You cultivate the opposite. Wholesome mind states. Then of course, to lie is negative. So the ennobler of lying is to arise the appropriate, good, appropriate and correct speeches that doesn't lead to negativity of intention, means to deceive people, to cause disadvantage to people, to take advantage of situation, or to hide the whatever wrong thing that you don't want people to know, means you have committed that, you have broken your moral code. So all this is part and parcel of cultivation of Noble Eightfold Path. Then the ennobler of not drinking, taking, partake intoxicant, is to meditate so that your consciousness will not fall, so that it will not intoxicate you. So all these ennobler are your right action, appropriate good action. So when you understand all this, you can cultivate them, isn't it? That's what Noble Eightfold Path is all about. So the four right effort will lead to beautiful transformation. It will help you to avoid all the evil, the wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action. Then it will help you to cultivate right thought, right speech, right action, leading to all the right livelihood. Then the fourth right effort is more direct and more important. You have to refine upon all this right thought, right speech, right action that you have cultivated and perfect them until it becomes perfections. That's how the paramitas can be cultivated and developed. So this is what Noble Eightfold Path is all about. This is what meditation is all about. The whole field is very wide, not what you think, not just sit, then focus, concentrate, and develop the calm and peace and the good meditative mind state. That is not meditation. Meditation involves the whole of the Noble Eightfold Path, and the bulk of it is sati and the four right effort. You need right view to start the spiritual, three spiritual view, right view. Law of karma, karma niyama, citta niyama, law of mind, and finally, dhamma niyama, law of truth, the essential dhamma that the Buddha has taught us. So when you have these three understanding developed, you will have right view. You will know how to live your life. You will know how to act. You will know how to arise. And you will awaken. You will transform. And that is what meditation is all about. That everything needs mindfulness if you want to purify your mind. At the thought level is right effort. Yes. That's a right effort to abandon the wrong thought that has arisen. Then right effort to prevent the wrong thought from arising. This one is evolving thought. You use effort. Then right effort to arise the wholesome thought, the right thought, appropriate thought and speeches and action that are still not in you. So all this involves the thought process. You use effort. You have to have the resolve, determine, and you have to arise them, cultivate them. Then when it comes to meditation, it's all about mindfulness, the four foundations of mindfulness, leading to samadhi, the collectedness of mind, unwavering mind. So when you understand Dhamma in this way, you become beautiful. Then life itself becomes your teacher. You will develop a lot of wisdom and understanding through your relationship in life, interaction in life. Whatever you come to experience through your sense or activity, there is Dhamma within. That's why today I received a WhatsApp from one Indonesian guy. I think his name is Yusuf Chandra. He somehow bumped into my website. Then he was full of joy and gratitude, and he wrote to me through the WhatsApp thanking me for creating the website because he benefited. Then he stated that, "Bradio, is it? I don't think you know me, is it? But I would like to tell you that your website was very interesting, very beautiful." And he said, "Thank you so much for your this website." Then I reply back and rejoice with his ability to understand and have such affinity with this type of Dhamma. Then I say, "May I know your name and may I know where are you from?" That's how he replied. That's how I know. So people nowadays who are seriously cultivating, they start to appreciate the real Dhamma, the real teaching. and more people have a very good comment. They really rejoice and they really send forward the sincere message to thank me, yeah, and to maybe let people understand that it is so beautiful. Mm. So all this can help you, can motivate you. If people from outside, they also can appreciate what this website has given them. As Kayamita, we should be more fortunate because we have the direct access and contact, and we have all this sharing, which is very difficult for other people who are not within our Kayamita chip grouping, who may not know of our detailed activity. So the only way for them to access is the YouTube video, the website, the publication, everything. They are all in the website. Then our objective and all those things, they are very beautifully laid out in the website. Mm. So those who go in with the interest and the understanding will appreciate and they will rejoice. So with this, I hope people can understand the importance of today's topic, the 18th sense rhyme, and what it can lead to. Okay, we will continue from where the notes is. Okay, we are at page 159. No? This is due to self-delusion, means the five aggregates of grasping, the grasping aggregate. You grasp because you have self-delusion. Living beings tend to attach and cling on to their physical form, means the physical body, their mental feelings, all of the external form that they come to perceive with every moment of sense experience or consciousness. Also their mental thinking, their mental consciousness, taking them to be real and calling them the I and the me and the mind, leading to all the suffering. Take for example, when one perceives their loved ones, their good friends, their colleagues, or something that they hold on to dearly, like their pets or various prized possessions, like their wealth, their property, their money, etc., even their beautiful cars. And when they grasp onto them, what happens? The fear of separation or losing them can arise. If we don't have the wisdom and deludedly perceive them as really belonging to us, once you attach or grasp and cling onto them, you can be afflicted and you will become very fragile and vulnerable. It is due to delusion that condition you to grasp and cling onto this, onto them, because you fail to see their universal characteristics of impermanent suffering state and anatta or non-self empty nature. All sense experience and phenomena, no matter how good or alluring, are a prelude to suffering because they are of the nature to arise and pass away and cease. So they were separate from you. Without wisdom developed via heedfulness or mindfulness, one will not be able to accept this reality. One must train one's mind to be heedful or ever mindful to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path and the four foundations of mindfulness leading to the enlightenment via realization of the Four Noble Truths. So this is the summary of what the practice of cultivation is. Then 2.2, the fourth foundation of mindfulness, the third category of cultivation is mindfulness of the six internal sense bases and the six external sense bases is related to the 18 sense rhyme and the 12 link of Paticca Samuppada teaching and also the fire sermon cultivation. The fire sermon is a very powerful sermon. It seems at that time when the Buddha delivered it, A lot of the yogi or cultivator at that time, at the assembly, become enlightened. Then it was told in the scripture too, I heard from Reverend Suvano, the heavens, the non-human, millions become enlightened. This fire sermon is very powerful. Right? I will go through with you. In the fire sermon, the Buddha taught how one can achieve liberation from suffering through detachment from the five senses and the mind consciousness. In this discourse, the Buddha described the sense basis, the resultant mental consciousness or phenomena as burning. Burning with what? Burning with greed, hatred, and delusion. Because that sutta, they use the word passion. Actually, passion is not the right word. It should be greed. Then aversion is another word for hatred. Then delusion is the same. Burning with greed, hatred, and delusion, and dukkha. Seeing such a noble disciple become weary or disenchanted with this passion and thus liberated from the sense basis, thereby achieving arahantship. This is described in more detail below. This one, I extracted it from the fire sermon. But the English translation of that version is not that accurate, so I have modified some of it. If I'm not wrong, it's from one of the Thai Pali chanting book on the fire sermon. According to the Buddha, he said, thus have I heard on one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Gaya Sisa, accompanied by 1,000 bhikkhu. The Buddha proclaimed, bhikkhu, all things are burning. In Pali is sabbam. Sabbam is all. Bhikkhave aditan, burning. Aditan is burning. What bhikkhu are these things burning? Then the Buddha said, the eye is burning. Means the eye that is responsible for the seeing consciousness is burning. You have to be mindful of that. Then bhikkhu, the visual form, means color, shape, and form, the sense data are also burning. Visual form, sense data received by the eyes are burning. Then the seeing consciousness is burning. Eye contact is burning. Also, whatsoever feeling felt as pleasant and unpleasant or neutral that arise with eye contact, that too is burning. With what is it burning? Burning with the fire of greed, hatred, and delusion. With the fire of, they use that three words. Greed they put as lust and passion, but I bracket the Pali one, lobha. Then hatred is dosa, and delusion is moha. I say it is burning with birth, old age, sickness, and death, with sorrow, with lamentation, with pain, with grief, with despair. So all this will lead to suffering. Then he go and repeat for all the organ. The ear is burning, bhikkhu. Sound are burning. Vibration or sense data received by the ear are burning. Hearing consciousness is burning. Ear contact is burning. Whatsoever feeling felt as pleasant, unpleasant, painful, or neither pleasant nor unpleasant that arise with ear contact, that too is burning. With what is it burning again? Burning with the fire of greed, hatred, and delusion. Then repeat. I say it's burning with old age, sickness, and death. Birth, old age, sickness, and death, with sorrow and lamentation, pain, grief, and with despair. The Buddha then repeat the same for all the other sense door consciousness as below. The nose, bhikkhu, is burning. So the sense data is order, are burning. Smell and sense data received by the nose are burning. Nose and smell consciousness is burning. Nose contact is burning, etc. Until feeling. The tongue is burning. Taste are burning. Sense data received by the body, tactile, are burning. So tau or taste consciousness is also burning. Then the contact is also burning. Then feeling that arises also burning. Then the body, bhikkhu, is burning. Tactile sensations are burning. Tactile feeling or sense data received by the body are burning. Bodily tactile consciousness is burning. Tongue contact is burning. Then feeling that arises burning. Then similarly, the mind is burning. Thoughts are burning. Mental object received by the mind are burning. Then mental consciousness is burning. Mind contact is burning. And whatever feeling that arise is also burning. With what is it burning? Burning with the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. I say it is burning with birth, old age, sickness, and death, with sorrow, with lamentation, with pain, with grief, and with despair. Bhikkhu, this part you must listen. When a noble disciple who has heard this truth and clearly see them thus in their meditation with mindfulness, he becomes wary of the eye, wary of visual form, wary of eye or seeing consciousness, wary of eye contact, wary of whatsoever feeling that arise at contact. Then he becomes wary of all the feeling that arise too. Then he becomes wary of all the similarly for all the organs, the ear, the nose, the tongue, all repeated, and bodily tactile, and finally thought consciousness. So I will read the thought consciousness. He becomes wary of his mind, the mundane mind, wary of the thought, the mental form, wary of mind and thought consciousness, wary of mind contact, and wary of whatsoever that is felt as feeling with mind contact. So all this, when you are mindful, you can observe that, experience them. Then when you know how they lead to suffering, misery, that's why it's like burning, burning. So the enlightened being, the Arya, they will not hold, they will not grasp, they will not cling, because they can't. That's why every moment of seeing, hearing, smell, taste, tactile, or thought consciousness, they are very different. They cannot be deceived. The phenomenal world of consciousness and form cannot delude them anymore. Because they realize all these are the source of suffering, the cause of suffering. When you attach, grab, and cling, you become afflicted. You get yourself entangled. So this fire sermon is very good. It triggers off the understanding of the urgency of cultivation. When you cultivate and develop the sensitivity and understand, it's really like see it burning. So our example that I used to give you is like your problem in life. Because you suffer mentally, you don't perceive it so clearly. You don't understand that you are suffering because you still have wrong view, wrong thought, and you blame people for what happened. But if, let's say, that problem that you have is like a burning charcoal or a molten burning thing, when you hold on to it, what happens? You can feel that it is burning you, tormenting you, making you miserable. So the fire sermon is the same. Everything that you are mindful of is burning because you can see it leading to suffering. And in that case, it's mental suffering. But because mental suffering, they don't burn you and torment you. You cannot see it. But you suffer, you become miserable. So the analogy of holding on to something that burn you and torment you is very, very beautiful. And it can awaken you. So if it's burning you and tormenting you, what is the right thing for you to do? Don't hold on to that thing anymore, understand or not? Because it's burning you and tormenting you. So, put it down. Put it down means what? I don't call it let go, understand or not? Because who let go? Only a person who is deluded will attach and cling and hold. And how can he let go when he has that delusion? So, when you understand, you will not hold. That's why you put it down. When you put it down, you feel what? Relief, isn't it? It's no more burning you and tormenting you. But the question is, that thing that is burning you and tormenting you is your problem. So you will always have that thought telling you, my problem is that one. I haven't resolved it. So what must you do? Yes, you must resolve it, but not by holding on to it, understand? When you hold on to it, you suffer, you become miserable. In that mind state, you don't have clarity of mind. How can you understand what is going on? Then how can you resolve it? So the right thing is not to hold. Not to hold means accept the reality of the moment, then don't react to it, don't stir, don't do anything. Be at peace. Then with that clarity of mind, when you are not suffering, when you don't have fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation, unhappiness, misery, then you have clarity of mind. You can act. Then you ask yourself, you inquire, what actually happened? Then you ask yourself, how can I act with wisdom to resolve it amicably so that there is no coming implication? That's how you act. Act with wisdom, following Noble Eightfold Path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. And Noble Eightfold Path is without evil. That's why there is right action. There is the right way to act. So, acting according to memory is not acting at all. Acting with wisdom is the right way to act. Right view, following Noble Eightfold Path. And then you don't have to hold on to that thing and become miserable. You inquire, what happened? You call it a problem because you perceive it with negativity. You go and worry about it. You go and project your thought. You stir your mind. You react to what happened. But according to the Buddha, what happened is the reality. That is what is, according to Jaya Krishnamurti. The reality of the moment. Then the Buddha said, whatever that arises, there are causes and conditions behind. So what are the causes and conditions? Under the five daily contemplation, the last one, he already said, we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. We are what we are because of karma. So very likely it's connected to karma. That's why you have to take care of karma, otherwise you suffer, you become miserable. So if the causes and conditions already set, means things is just the way it is. It cannot be otherwise. Like the Buddha said, when condition is like that, things will be like that. It cannot be other way. If you want things your way, you suffer, you become miserable. Means you lack wisdom. You attach, you cling, you grasp. Nature's law that governs life and existence is very fair. Whatever that arises, there are causes and conditions. In the past, you had done all this nonsense to people. Now you become the victim. That's why you are hit. Then you perceive in negativity, get angry, stir your mind, and become miserable. There is suffering. There is your payback time, karmic friction. So when you understand all this, then you tell yourself, if this is karma, then I accept that I am at peace. Then I do what I have to do to move on. What must I do? If I need to ask for forgiveness, repent, I do. Then I vow not to repeat all this by following the advice of the Buddha to cultivate. the advice of the Buddha, to avoid all evil, I keep the precept. Then to cultivate wholesomeness, I cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, the first six path factors. Then I meditate to purify my mind, to develop the wisdom. Then I change my life, I transform. My life become beautiful. Then when I take care of my precept, I will protect myself and protect others. I don't harm others. I don't create karmic negativity. So I don't have to pay back. There is no karmic negativity. That's why I don't have to suffer anymore from that moment onward, except the past karmic that I haven't resolved. From now onward, your life will transform, become beautiful. That's how you become a true cultivator, a Dharma practitioner, a Buddhist, worthy of the Buddhist, the Buddha as your teacher, means a devotee, a Buddhist devotee. Yeah. To be worthy of the Buddha, you must at least follow his advice to avoid all evil, cultivate wholesomeness, and purify your mind. So this teaching is very beautiful. So when you understand all this, then you know this is the way forward. This is the way to change your life, to transform your life, to improve your life. And these are no need money. Don't go and waste money on feng shui, on all the fortune telling and all those things. Forget about it. Because like the Buddha say, your life is entirely depend on karma. If you don't take care of karma, whatever you do will not benefit you, will not help you, will not change your life. Things that will change your life is only your karma. You need wisdom to take care of karma. You need to cultivate appropriately, accordingly, following the advice of the Buddha. Live life the Dhamma way. So this is most beautiful. So you can solve your problem really. You no need to cling on to your problem, hold on to your problem, and suffer and become miserable. And yet you don't know you are suffering. But if you reflect on this fire sermon, everything is burning. Means whatever you perceive as problem is burning. But when you perceive it with negativity, it becomes a problem. But if I don't perceive it with negativity, I accept the reality of the moment with wisdom based on what the Buddha has taught me and based on my mindfulness training that I have observed and seen, that everything is dependent, originating, condition, arising, causal phenomena. He know you, he know me. There is no reality. Only mighty nature rolling by. Then why do we cling? Why do we grasp? When we come with nothing. When we leave this world, we leave with nothing. That's why the famous Mandarin saying, Lai ye kong, qi ye kong. Na mo si zu, he bi ku ku, in between, wei kong liu le. So if your coming is empty, your going is empty, then why do you grieve in between over emptiness? You come with nothing, means empty. You go also cannot take along anything, also empty. Then why do you suffer and become tormented and grieve in between? For nothing, over what? Emptiness. That's why you cannot see sunyata, emptiness, you cannot awaken. You cannot realize the three universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state, non-self or empty nature. You cannot awaken. You will not have this wisdom. Then you cannot understand life. You cannot understand the reality within life. The present moment reality, the highest in life. And that is the highest, no? The present moment. And the only reality in life. But how stable is the present moment? Split second is day and gone. Split second is it. So what is life? How real can life be? It is so transient. If it exhibit this characteristic of impermanence so clearly in front of you. That's why without mindfulness you cannot see. You don't have the sensitivity. You don't have the understanding. You are like blind, heedless. That's how living beings suffer, become afflicted. So all these teachings are very beautiful. So we go back to the notes. Today's recording is very good. You should go through it. So this fire sermon, now we come to the final summary. In this way, the Buddha said, the bhikkhu or the enlightened disciple, he becomes free of passion, free of greed, hatred and delusion, and he becomes aware of feeling with insight knowledges and wisdom, means with the right view after he has straightened his view. He knows there is no more rebirth. The holy life is his, that he has done all that should be done, means beyond training. Yeah. These were the blessed one's words when he spoke to the bhikkhu thus. The whole congregation of over 1,000 bhikkhu rejoiced and approved of his words and attained liberation from the asavak. Asavak are the latent tendency, yeah? The very strong defilement through clinging no more, and their hearts were completely free and they all become arahant. Bhikkhu. So under notes, I will read through from another commentary, which is also quite good. Bhikkhu is a form is burning, feeling is burning, perception is burning. This one easier to relate to based on our familiar terms. Volitional formation are burning and consciousness is burning. Seeing thus, the instructed noble disciple experience vary towards form. You can replace the word vary with this enchantment. Feeling, perception, volitional formation and consciousness. Through dispassion, see the word dispassion, disenchantment. And this mind is liberated, so it's the same as above, from the asava, through clinging no more, and the hearts were completely free. The ensuing text reveal that all sabbe refer to the six internal sense bases, alayatana. They are your eye, your ear, your nose, your tongue, your body, and mind. Somebody didn't mute. The speaker was on. We will mute for you, don't worry. Okay. I read again. The six internal sense bases, they are your five physical senses and your mind. Eye, ear, nose, tongue, bodily tactile, and mind. Then the six external sense bases, they are visual form, sound or vibration, then smell, taste, touches, and mental object. Consciousness, vijnana, contingent on these sense bases, their respective, what they call consciousness will arise. So like the eye give rise to seeing consciousness, the eye give rise to hearing consciousness, the tongue, taste consciousness, the body, tactile consciousness, and the mind, thought consciousness. Then by burning, the Pali word is aditan, is meant with the fire of, he used the word passion, actually is greed, yeah. Greed, the root of greed. But the Pali word is ragagina. ragagina. That's why they use the word passion. Because raga is a type of negative passion. It's like lust for that. Raga. Then the fire of aversion means dosara, jina. Then the fire of delusion, moha, jina. Only the first word, they don't use loba. They use raga. I think raga is a stronger word. It's a very like lustful word. The manifestation of suffering refers to the first noble truth reality, birth, old age, sickness and death, leading to sorrow, lamentation, pain, distress and despair. We are this arise the whole mess of suffering. With birth comes existence. Existence bring about suffering, when you don't have wisdom. Yeah. So initially, before you become enlightened, you will suffer. Then there is a very good saying, I think. Disenchanted, he becomes dispassionate. Through dispassion, he is fully released. With full release, there is understanding, fully released. He discerns that birth is ended, the holy life fulfilled, the task done. There is nothing further for this world. Means you become asekha, beyond training. No need to train really. So this poem is very good in fact. So through wisdom, you start to understand that everything is burning. Then you will not touch it, anusana. You will not cling onto it. You will not grasp onto it. So all these senses, they are like a physical tool for you to use. So use it. Don't be attached to it. Don't cling onto it. Don't grasp onto it. Don't believe that this is you. This is real. You want to own it. You want to possess it. All these are delusion. So understand, the form and mind is karmically conditioned from our karmic nature out for us to come to this existential world, to live life, to experience life, to go through life, to do whatever that we need to do with our life. So make use of it like a tool. Use it. Do not cling. Do not be deluded by it. Even your mind is the same, like a tool. Use it with wisdom appropriately. So like a tool, use it to help you, to benefit you and others, to be a blessing to all. So take for example, you have a knife, which is also a tool. If we use it appropriately, correctly, means what? We use it to cut fruits, cut vegetables, shape things, carve things, and do whatever that we want to do with it. But if instead, we use it to cut ourselves, harm ourselves, hurt ourselves, and hit or at others, or kill and harm others, that is the wrong way of using that tool, isn't it? But precisely, deluded living beings, the heedless, they are using their thought wrongly to arise the wrong thought, to harm themselves, to hurt themselves, to make themselves miserable, until they have so much sorrow, lamentation, and misery, until they enter depression. That's why they create this cocoon of wrong thought that condition their fear, their worry, their anxiety, their sorrow, their lamentation, their deep resentment, their hatred, their unhappiness, leading to all the various misery, sorrow and lamentation, grief. So all these are mental states that denote misery, suffering, affliction. So if you don't want to suffer, you better wake up. You better reverse all this to an understanding. Better cultivate Noble Eightfold Path to root out all the wrong thought, wrong speech, and wrong action. So this is the way forward. There is no other teaching more beautiful than the Buddha's teaching, especially Noble Eightfold Path, that leads to the end of all suffering. Oh, 10:15 already. I think we may have to stop. Oh, sorry, one more graphic. Huh? Okay, we finished this graphic. So this one very easy. Huh? I think now you understand the 18 sense line in graphic form. Very easy to understand. First set of six, your internal sense basis. Second set of six, your external sense data. Third set of six, the respective sense of consciousness. Then they are put in what they call, how you call this, huh? All the circle connected. In chemistry, we call it the SP5 hybrid. So the center is our mind, huh? Mental consciousness. That is the common denominator. That's why all the other senses need the mind to trigger off their respective sense of consciousness. So that shows very clearly. Huh? You can read through yourself. Then Okay, the last part, meditation, I will read through also. So meditation consists of two parts. Meditation, okay, I read through. Meditation consists of two parts. First part is to train the mind to be mindful, leading to heedfulness. Then the second part is to make use of this trained mind in heedfulness to live life and cultivate noble eightfold path with specific and special emphasis or emphasis on the four foundation of mindfulness cultivation. This mind that is trained listen to you, and you want it to be silent within, it will just be silent and aware within. If you want it to be aware or think, then it will just do that. Even if you want it to be at the moment of feeling, perception, activity of mind or consciousness, then it will just do that. That is, it listen to you. Heedfulness can only arise when the mind is trained to be heedful. Mind, one must know how to silence one's mind, to connect to one's true mind. The untrained mind is very heedless, and it thinks a lot because of ignorance and delusion. Without the heedfulness developed, one is as if dead, spiritually dead, as per Dhammapada verse 21. Since heedfulness is the path to the deathless, and the heedful do not die, so please do strive on with heedfulness. Then there is a note. There are short notes for Heart Sutta class 30 and 31. Oh, sorry, there is no short notes for Heart Sutta class 30 and 31, because prior to your sharing was just based on a review of the Heart Sutta class 29 short note. So this is for information. Okay, very good. We complete one lesson. And today's lesson is very beautiful. You should listen to it and develop the understanding. It can help you develop great understanding. You will come to understand who you are, what you are, and how you function as a human being. Then you will develop the awakening and the wisdom. That is what mindfulness and cultivation is all about. So today one is very complete, very detailed. In fact, this is the first time I'm able to go into this very deeply, because even in the past retreat, you all are not ready. That's why I didn't go into it with such depth. And now it's different. That's why I can go in with such depth. And we have all the time. We don't need to finish everything within the 8 or 9 days. So this is the positive aspect of the retreat being cancer, the Sanbao Si, Triple Gems Temple, the actual physical retreat is indeed a blessing in disguise, that the COVID-19 bring about the causes and conditions for it to cancer. So a lot of people blame COVID-19 for a lot of wrong things, but if you have the Dhamma understanding, you will have gratitude towards COVID-19, where they give you beautiful condition to cultivate, to understand life, to adjust, to witness the new normal, to actually develop a lot of beautiful understanding and training.
Hello, Brother Theo.
Poching Sado, yeah.
Amitofo to Brother Theo and all Kayanamitas.
Amitofo, yeah.
Actually, firstly, I want to say something about the short videos. I find it very good. Some of the titles has been polished really well.
Yeah.
I find so much joy looking at it. Wow,
yeah.
So good, you know.
Also, Sado to you. Yeah, good.
So the titles was upgraded. I feel very good that these are so precise and succinct, you know. Yeah, so concise, you know. I said, wow, right. That is the summary of all the so-called Dhamma talk.
The Dhamma content.
The Dhamma content, yes. So good.
Also, all of your contribution, because if you all don't listen, we don't know where to cut to. That's why all the Kayanamita that play their role and their part will enable us to do it. That's why we rejoice. Especially Pucheng, you did very well. You have gone through about 4 Heart Sutta, lesson 1, 2, 3, 4. And everyone, you managed to get a lot of very nice short video. In fact, there was a latest one my daughter told me you did 8. Fantastic video, one sharing.
No, because I find some of it is really, really good. That
when I speak, we try to mute your mic first, Pocheng. Then later we on back for you, otherwise distortion. Mm. So what is important is all these short video can help people because they don't have to spend much time. Then when they listen, they get interested. Then they go and look for it. Then when you come out with all these short video, those who are helping out, you learn. You listen to it again, and the Dhamma stand out very beautifully. Then you try to use your own word to formulate the title. Then when they send it to me to edit, I will know how to polish it, like what you say, and make it like more precise. Then all this sharing can be very useful, very helpful. When they develop the interest to listen, they will want to find out more. That's how they will go to the website. They will do a lot of listening to the Dhamma. Means the Avijja Sutta. Yeah? After you have Dhamma friend, you have the condition. Step two is listening to the correct Dhamma or appropriate true Dhamma. So that one will give rise to a lot of understanding, first and second turning. Then they can reflect, contemplate. Then they will do the first phase of Dhamma, Pariyatti, learning about the teaching. Then second phase is Patipatti, putting it into cultivation in daily life, in real life. Then after that, the third phase of Dhamma, Pativeda, to reap the fruit of their hard work, means to really live that third phase of Dhamma, which is the most beautiful, Pativeda, the life of an enlightened being. Mm. Okay, we on back. Pocheng, we will unmute you back. Yeah.
Yes, totally agree. So sometimes I did a lot of the short videos, although it's many, but I felt that it's really good for people, you know,
very
who have
helpful.
The chance to, especially new ones, or sometimes even for me, I can go back and re-listen, you know, and like you said, it gives you more depth of the particular topic itself. Mm. Yes. And I also like the polished title given, you know, that it explain the topic in totality, you know.
Yes.
Mm. Okay. So that is what I want to say for the short video. The second one I want to talk about is my meditation reporting.
Sadhu. Mm.
Yes, sadhu. I want to talk about this meditation. Mm. It was, as usual, very silent and still. Yeah. And in this silent mind, I saw this content of consciousness, you know.
You have the ability by now to see that. Yeah.
So it was in very slow motion, very detailed. Yeah. But
like
I wasn't
slowed down for you to see.
Yeah. So I wasn't like deceived by it. I wasn't just aware of it.
Yeah.
And then it was very slow. And I just aware. And then after that, it moved away. And then it kept showing a lot, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of the, like a movie film, you know. A lot.
Yeah.
But I'm just not deluded or deceived by it, you know.
Yeah. That's how the mindfulness and the understanding is very different. When you have mindfulness that is very stable and very clear, you become very different. That's why you can see all this movement. Your observation is through the silent mind, understand. And it cannot deceive you anymore because you have already gone through. You have already developed the ability to understand. And the awareness is wisdom energy. That's why you can understand. And that is better than Yoniso Manasikara. Because that one is the real understanding that manifests within the moment. So that one, like There is a Dhammapada verse under Appamada, I think. It's like that wisdom energy is, he used the word Appamada, heedfulness. It's like able to burn away the defilement. I forgot which Dhammapada verse already, I think 20 something. After verse 21, 22, 23, the few more verse. It's like a fire raging through the defilement, burn everything, clear everything. That's why it's very powerful. That's why I say you will be able to see a lot of amazing things, a lot of transformation, because once you're able to connect to that nature and develop the stability and clarity, and to have that type of silent mind, which is without thought, without any activity of mind, that state of mind, which is so clear and so beautiful with that type of wisdom energy, sati, is going to transform you. And it will continuously let you understand many, many things. Then from life itself, like I said, technically, you don't need a teacher. You will understand them. Because like just now, your description of all those things that try to deceive you, the Sankara movement is like slow down for you to see and for you to understand. It cannot deceive you anymore because you have like understood their movement, their characteristic, their nature. So all this you will experience. Then it will continue to stabilize and you will understand deeper and deeper, more and more, more and more. Then later on, all of my sharing because of what happened to you will be very different. I will go much deeper because people can understand now. Like today one is not a problem for you at all. You will understand. Okay?
Yes. Today one, I understand fully what you say.
Yeah.
When I first went for the retreat, I don't understand.
Yeah, you don't understand at that time.
Well, I don't know what is that about, you know,
yeah.
Why is it confusing, you know.
Yes.
Except for
but
the
now,
years, I mean for the physical
after what
form,
has gone through, you become very different. That's why I say the understanding unfolds by itself. No thought involved, no knowledge involved. The wisdom that arises through the mindfulness and awareness nature, the heedfulness that is developed, is so different.
Yeah, I don't need to analyze, you know, straight away
no
I understand,
analyze,
you know.
No need to reason one, it's just
finish. Yes, just understand, finish, no need to think like how
then
I know, figure out.
Everything becomes like very simple one. We like don't have problem one.
Yes,
people
very
who
simple.
Come and complain everything, I say, yours is nothing. Yours is very simple. So you have that clarity to explain to people.
Yes, very clear.
Why do you unnecessarily torment yourself and make yourself miserable? That's what I can see. Meditation is to train your mind to develop the ability to be heedful, to be aware, to have that beautiful mind state, to have the inner awareness. But people go to meditation to torture themselves, torment themselves, and make themselves miserable without understanding and thinking that they have done vipassana. That is the biggest joke to me. I saw a lot. People are doing thought-based meditation, wasting their time. They don't understand what is meditation. Meditation is the best training to recuperate, to develop the calmness, the peacefulness, the tranquility, the stillness. And you are just aware with that nature, that purifying wisdom energy is so beautiful. And that silent, that tranquility, that stillness, that awareness within, that enable you to understand, live life. All these are so beautiful. And they are so wonderful, amazing. Really, all this word cannot describe the real thing. The real thing is even more deeper and more fantastic than what I just described.
Yes, so, thank you very much.
Yeah, very good. Okay, I think we can end. Thank you so much, Pochay. Let us rejoice. Sadhu.